This episode is brought to you by Prime. Obsession is in session. And this summer, Prime Originals have everything you want. Steamy romances, irresistible love stories, and the book to screen favorites you've already read twice. Off Campus, Elle, Every Year After, The Love Hypothesis, Sterling Point, and more. Slow burns, second chances, chemistry you can feel through the screen. Your next obsession is waiting. Watch only on Prime.
Girl, winter is so last season. And now spring's got you looking at pictures of tank tops with hungry eyes. Your algorithm is feeding you cutoffs. You're thirsty for the sun on your shoulders. That perfect hang on the patio sundress. Those sandals you can wear all day and all night. And you've had enough of shopping from your couch. Done hoping it looks anything like the picture when you tear open that envelope? It's time for a little in-person spring treat. It's time for a trip to Ross. Work your magic.
Welcome to another episode of the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord, and I am your proud and grateful host, and I am so appreciative of you stopping by our operation, our little podcast. I'm grateful for the time that you are spending, and I hope that for the next hour or so, I'm able to add a little bit of hope and meaning and perhaps a revelation or two in the course of our very special episode on the podcast. As you know, I don't have many guests, and I have stepped out of my comfort zone a little bit to invite guests on to the podcast. And each of the three guests have been amazing, and I'm grateful for them sharing their wisdom and their story and a little bit of the soundtrack of their respective lives with us here on the Principal Liner Notes podcast. Well, in this episode, we do have a very special guest. And in this case, the guest was in person with me. You will literally be at my kitchen table with our very special guest, Lavanna Roth. You may know Lavanna Roth from hashtag Ignite Your Shine. You may know her as an international keynoter and speaker and an author. You can follow her at Lavanna Roth on Twitter and on Instagram, and you can follow the hashtag Ignite Your Shine. You can also follow Prime to Shine, which is another organization that Lavanna has founded for those that are interested in becoming speakers and consultants in the educational and business realm. But I know Lavanna as a friend, a thought partner, and most importantly, a bandmate. And for the next 48, 45 minutes or so in the next segment, you'll be a part of our conversation. And we're grateful for your time and grateful for you to be with us around my kitchen table. We talk about the topic of psychological safety. It's a topic that is very important to me and also very important to Lavanna. And so we explore that very important topic, which is so needed in this day of global pandemic, mental health pandemic. And I'm grateful for her time and grateful for her wisdom. So sit back, relax, or if you're on your walk, enjoy your pace, or if you're working out, great job. Or if you're just in your record store, that's great too. And stay tuned for what I feel is an important and meaningful conversation. And I'm very grateful for you spending time with us here on the Principal Liner Notes podcast.
Plan B is a backup birth control option that's there for you when things don't go according to plan. It specifically works after unprotected sex and before pregnancy occurs by temporarily delaying ovulation. Plan B is available nationwide at all major retailers and through delivery apps like DoorDash. No ID, prescription, or age requirement. It's the number one OBGYN recommended brand of emergency contraception, and it won't impact your future fertility. That's freedom to be. Use as directed.
Okay, imagine this. We are all gathered around my kitchen table, And we are here with my great friend and thought partner, Lavanna Roth. And what's special about this podcast, as you all who've listened and kept it, I don't have many guests. So Lavanna is my third guest on the podcast. And this is also the first time that I have had on the Principal Liner Notes podcast an in-person guest. So this is a real life. I'm eyeball to eyeball with Lavanna. We are here in the sophisticated Principal Liner Notes podcast studio, which is my kitchen table for this for our purposes. So Lavanna, this is welcome to my home. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the kitchen.
Oh, Sean, thank you so much. Thank you. And it's funny when you start this out saying, imagine us being around the kitchen table, because you literally are all here with us, just so you know.
Yes. So wherever you are, and again, as I often say, I'm glad that the podcast is a trap door for you. And I'm honored that you are part of our conversation with Lavanna. Lavanna is someone that I go to for advice and counsel and wisdom and insight, and I've asked Lavanna to the podcast not necessarily to test her music trivia knowledge. So,
thank goodness.
Yeah. So there will be no, but there might be. You never know. You know, all roads go to music. You never know. But I won't do that to you. But I do want us to talk a little bit about the concept of psychological safety, because I know it's a topic you and I have talked about personally, and that it's a topic that has always been a part of your work with Ignite Your Shine, and I know that within the last year or so you've really studied it and done some things with it. So for those who may not have an understanding of that term, In your own words, the elevator pitch, the layman's term of psychological safety.
Yeah, it's something that, you know how when you do things and you have certain concepts and beliefs or things that keep popping up and you're pretty sure you're spot on, but you don't have the words for it? That's where I've been until I heard the term psychological safety. And I went, oh my goodness, this is exactly what it's about. And I'll use the definition that Dr. Timothy Clark uses for psychological safety. He says it's rewarded vulnerability. So I'll say it again. It's rewarded vulnerability. So when I think about, you know, a lot of times people in different workplaces or even your own family, but let's stick to workplace for a moment. You know, oftentimes it's encouraged, we want you to be authentic. We want you to be vulnerable. But the practice doesn't actually follow through. What ends up happening is a lot of times there's a punishment or some kind of repercussion or some kind of retaliation in some way. And that's what this is not about. To have psychological safety, which lends itself to all of innovation, to achievement, to a culture of feeling that they're bonded, all comes back to being vulnerable, but it's rewarded for doing so. It's not a I gotcha.
And it, you know, it sounds to me like the opposite or the anti, if you will, of transactional, right? So it's, you know, it's not like I'm going to give you this for this. It seems like it serves a larger purpose. So digging deeper into that term and that concept, how does that, Where would be some examples of success of that, or environments or cultures or organizations or historically where, to you, this is the textbook example of psychological safety in action?
For me, what ends up happening is I see in a culture that the barrier of hierarchy is broken down. Mm-hmm. So, and I'll give you an example. You know, I own a company, Ignite Your Shine, Inc. There are about 24, 25 of us now in the company. And my core team, we meet every week. It is not about Lavanna's ideas. It's not about Lavanna's the CEO. It's not about it has to be done her way. it is all about coming together, and the ultimate driver is what is the best for the business, right? Mm-hmm. For who we serve to impact at a greater level. That is drives everything that we do. So we break down the hierarchy. And so it's not, you know, my team knows they can push back with me. Mm-hmm. They know they can challenge me. And there are times where, you know, the challenge is, okay, I hear what you're saying and I'm still going to disagree, or I hear what you're saying and by all means, you're right. Like, let's do it. Let's do it this way. Let's try it. And I value that. And it's the same thing, you know, in education, when if we make the goal, which is so dear to my heart, if we make the goal that it's about the students mm-hmm. and about what can we achieve for the best of the students, it doesn't mean we always agree on what that best means. That's pretty ambiguous of a term if we think about it. But if we have discussions that are heated, disagreeing, but ultimately we know it's not about you, Sean, it's not about me, Lavanna, mm-hmm. it's not about anybody else except what is best. And if we can have those conversations and come out in the end going, okay, it doesn't matter whose idea it was, right? What matters is this what we think is the best decision, as best as we can come to an agreement and move forward with that to make everything better.
Wow. So, so many wheels are turning right now, and I've been so looking forward to this conversation, but I'm going to try not to go down the road of music, but it's impossible for me to.
I say go for it.
Yeah. So it's kind of like in the Beatles, and right now I'm wearing a Beatles hoodie, you know, yes. and people know I'm a Beatles nut. I'm a geek, you know, when it comes to that, but it's kind of like when John Lennon wrote the song Strawberry Fields Forever, and Strawberry Fields is literally based on a place in Liverpool near where he grew up, and he, you know, wrote this beautiful song and you know, he submitted it to the band and they recorded it, and probably within the next couple of weeks or so, Paul McCartney said, I've got a song about our childhood, or about a place that I knew in Liverpool, that was Penny Lane. And to me, you know, that band, which represents so much, but, you know, here, this kind of random song that a pop band, the Beatles, I mean, no one at that time was doing mainstream songs about their childhood in that poetic way. Right. And, you know, again, this was, I Want to Hold Your Hand, She Loves You. Those were what was, you know, selling hits, but this very nostalgic song, look back, and then Paul felt, I guess, psychologically safe enough, you know, to write his own type of song. Would that be?
Yes, I love this example. And we'd all be disappointed if you didn't refer to the Beatles or music in some way.
Yeah.
That's who you are, and that's what you bring to all of us, which is fabulous. Yes, because it's the fact that both of them, it wasn't about, well, I'm the star or you're not, or I already wrote a song, you can't write a song. It wasn't a competition, mm-hmm. right? It was everyone bringing their individuality to the forefront to be better together. And that's literally what our Shine is about too, right? It's about individuality. What are your strengths, gifts, and your passions, and bringing all that together to be able to elevate everyone and elevate the cause.
Yeah. And I see that in real time, not only in your work, but in our application of Ignite Your Shine in our schoolhouse. And, you know, it's with Shine, it's not, I mean, we don't say I'm going to ignite your psychological safety, but you do it in a way, and you present it in a way, Ignite Your Shine, you know, I see the good in you, and I want the good in you to come out. And therefore I, as the teacher or TA or instructional facilitator or principal, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that you have that. I mean, is that?
Yeah. Because what we end up finding a lot of is that if you don't feel psychologically safe, then you pull back on who you are. Mm-hmm. You pull back on your ideas. You don't share. I think one of the best examples that, you know, coming from the top of my head that also means a lot to me, though, is when an educator won't share in a team meeting or in a faculty meeting, because if they do, there's the conversation of, oh, there she goes again. She right. thinks she's great. Oh, look at him. He always has the best ideas. And it becomes this where it's, so if you look at the core of Shine, it's really about building up confidence. And if you have confidence because you believe in who you are and you're your own person, you bring your own greatness to the table, then it's not so much of the putting down of the other people, because it's an equality that's coming together. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but that's how I'm gonna say it. It's everyone coming together and contributing, and it's not this competition of so many times when, you know, that professional jealousy, because that hurts everybody involved.
Right.
And so when we can break through that barrier of feeling that, you know what, it's okay for me to say this idea and no one's going to judge me, or no one's going to say, oh my gosh, he's so stupid. Like, what a dumb idea. Mm-hmm. Like, you just broke down entire mm-hmm. trust factor there and acceptance factor there. And because of that, the person now shuts down. And what we just did is we lost an entire individual who's bringing such greatness to the table, but we didn't cause an opportunity for them to be heard. And so I'm actually going to share, Dr. Timothy Clark has four stages of psychological safety. So Amy Edmondson is like the, you know, yeah. the birth mother, I'll say, of psychological safety, and really right embedding into the, you know, base of what it is. And then Dr. Timothy Clark has also taken some of that work. But his four stages are, first one is inclusion. Mm-hmm. So do people in the room feel included? Mm. And that is a whole, you know, depth to itself. The second stage is, do we feel safe enough to learn? So if I feel included in a faculty meeting, for example, do I feel safe enough to learn, as in, do I feel safe to say, hey, Mr. Gillard, I was wondering where can I, whatever it may be.
Right.
So do I feel safe enough to do that, or in my team? The third stage is now is going to be contributor. So do I feel safe enough to now contribute to the conversation? You know, so I have an idea about this, or I was thinking about this. Have we ever considered this? You know, and you really go through that model. The ultimate step, and I think it's one of the, I think there's actually a pretty big jump to go from contributor to challenger. And that is exactly what challenger, that fourth step is, that yeah. fourth stage, is now do I feel okay to say, Mr. Gaylord, I hear what you're saying as the idea that we're going to implement, but I have to share I don't agree with that because, mm-hmm. right? And so now I'm feeling okay as you, the administrator, you know, again, if we look at a hierarchy, right. Do I feel okay to challenge you? And what I think is interesting about that is that everybody involved has to be okay to be challenged, right? So we have to have our own level of confidence, our own level of belief in who mm-hmm. we are, to have someone say that to us. And one of my most favorite moments is I have a teammate and she will challenge me. Like, she will say, Levana, I don't agree, and here's why, you know, and I'll push back. And there's times where I think if people on the outside were to watch us, they would, not that we get mean, we don't get like, you know, loud or anything like that, but boy, do we push back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then after a little bit, we're saying, okay, so here's my thoughts, here's your thoughts. You know, and there's so many times we go with what she says because she has an insight that I don't always have, and vice versa. But it's through that conversation, that going back, that challenging is what is the key. But I do, I think there's a big jump to go from me saying yeah. I'm going to contribute something versus challenge.
Yeah. Because challenge invites conflict, and folks have different levels of threshold and comfort with conflict. You know, and I think about the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, where very famously he brought in, and it's a great book that Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote, Team of Rivals, where he brought in people into his cabinet that he knew were going to oppose him. And he invited that because, yeah. you know, my interpretation, he knew the country was divided or was on the verge of civil war when he got elected. And he knew that... He needed all opinions and all points of view as he was going to make these large decisions. And there's a level of humility too as a leader that goes with that, and being comfortable in your own skin. That's, I mean, I know I've struggled with that mm-hmm. as a leader. I'll kind of think, well, man, I hope, even if I say it, hey, it's okay to disagree. There's a whole lot more to that than just saying, it's okay to disagree with me.
Exactly.
You know, so for, how do we,
how do we convey that sense as leaders, as educators in the classroom? Because I think about some of the teachers that are listening to this, and well, why aren't the kids responding to me? Why aren't they, you know, I want them to be critical thinkers, but how do we, what would be some tips to create that culture or to create that comfort so that I can disagree and say, you know what, Lavanna, this, with, you know, with all due respect, I disagree or what have you. I know that's easier said than done. So what are some ways that we can build that trust?
Well, I think there's, you know, a lot, you nailed it on the head. It's one thing to say it,
yeah,
but it's to be able to follow it back up. So again, I think vulnerability is a key. Mm-hmm. You know, wanting to be vulnerable. With that said, I also think with that has to come the understanding that it's okay if you disagree with me and to call me out on it.
Yeah.
Right. So if I'll use the example since you used it, you know, if you said, oh, Lavanna, by all means, share with me.
Yeah.
You know, I can take it. If you disagree, I'm all for it. And then I share something with you and I immediately watch the defense or I hear a defense coming
yes.
from you. I have to be able to say something to call you out. So on our team, we actually have code words. Okay, so instead of me saying, Sean, you know what? You're so full of it right now, right? Not a good way to handle it, right?
Right, yeah.
So instead, we come up with funny ways of we say a code word, and that code word cues us in and gets us to laugh.
Wow.
Right? And so that immediately goes, oh, all right. And the other person now has that reflection moment to say, oh, wow, yes, okay, I said one thing, and I am doing a different thing. And I think we just all have to have that understanding and patience. This is not like you decide one day, boom, I've got psychological safety.
Right.
Nailed it. Done. It doesn't happen that way. I think every experience we bring to the table, every person that's in the room, it's constantly shifting. So as educators, you know, if you're in your classroom, it's funny because we will so often say, or an administrator building, you know, we will often say like, absolutely, like if you don't agree with me, come talk to me, come share with me what it is. But then turn around and become defensive almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like talking out of both sides of our mouth. We have to get to a level of where if either someone's calling us out on it, if we're not doing it, or we're raising that own flag of saying, you know what, let me reflect for a moment. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
So I did teaching with Love and Logic, mm-hmm. right? And then I loved it in the classroom. It worked amazing. And then along came my daughter. And I taught my daughter Love and Logic. And that's the beauty of Love and Logic is, mm-hmm. you know, so one of the things, for example, when they argue with you is you say, I love you too much to argue. You know, so in the classroom, you could say, I respect you too much to argue, or you could say, I love you too much to argue, but become a broken record. But I taught my daughter at times where I said, there were times I lost it. I hate to say it, but I did. I knew better. I knew better. And I lost it.
We've all been there.
Yes. Parents.
Yeah.
Parenting.
That's another podcast.
That's a whole other podcast. Exactly. Exactly. And I remember saying multiple times to my daughter that, you know, I would stop and go, I'm sorry. That was not Love and Logic of me. And so she learned to say, Mom, that's not very Love and Logic. Now, she didn't use it against me because there had to be this understanding,
right?
And it became kind of like a laughing thing, like, that was not very Love and Logic, Mom. And I'm like, that wasn't. And I'm like, so I need to rethink how I'm gonna do this.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, it's that vulnerability, the openness of the conversation, the sharing, like that is creating psychological safety. And I wish I always did it perfect, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing, like in the classroom, like it's okay, even if you handle it defensively the first time. You know, like, I'm not being, I'm not being defensive. And you know you are.
Right.
But it takes that reflection period and that growth period to do that. But I do. I think it's just, and one, it's opening the door. Two, it's being vulnerable. And three, having that open, honest conversation of, you know, I did not handle that well. I am so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, by the way, something I want to bring out is that there's a discrepancy in psychology when we say sorry versus I'm sorry. So if we're going to talk about psychological safety, we all know, but even if whether it's consciously or unconsciously or subconsciously, whatever the right word is there, subconsciously, I guess, is that if I say sorry, I'm not really owning it. What I'm doing is saying sorry to you, right? If I say I'm sorry, I'm owning it.
Yeah.
Yes, and so to me, psychological safety has to encompass us being willing to step up and take ownership of our good actions, our not so good, maybe even the ugly.
It's powerful. And, you know, there's also a little bit of responsibility, as I'm reflecting, on the leader's part to, and I talked about this several podcasts ago, about how we need to tune up our hearts and tune up our ears to the pulse of what's happening. And that vulnerability too, I mean, requires, again, a little bit of humility, a little bit of courage as well, to say, hey, listen, Levana, because to me, a lot of the psychological safety in the times where I have felt success is when I've done the follow-up. So in other words, hey, Levana, you got a minute? Sure. If you don't, that's okay. But I really appreciated you sharing that disagreement. I saw something I didn't see. And sometimes I'll try to build that frame and invest in that frame for that person so that they know that was okay.
Yep.
And man, I hope the next meeting, call me out.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. It's hard as hell to do that too, you know.
Absolutely.
Because I may not agree with that person or agree with you, but I always have to remind myself there's value in the voice. There's always value in the voice, right? And it may not be the voice that I want to hear at that time. It may be the voice that's going to make the faculty meeting go 20 more minutes. And I'm trying to get, oh, we got to go, you know, but there's value in the voice. And to recognize that and to appreciate that requires investment on the part of the person receiving it that's trying to build this culture of psychological safety. Again, easier said than done. Doesn't have to be, because it should be easy, right? It should be something.
We wish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
we all bring so much with us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things that I think is important to remember, is that we're all bringing our stories, our experiences, our journeys with us, and we all don't come from the same place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just gave me an aha, which you often do, Sean, when we have the conversations. When you look at, of course, when you look at the four stages, what I realize is inclusion is okay, I'm included, right? Like,
right.
Okay, I feel comfortable. I walk in the room and I don't feel like people are staring at me or thinking, why is he or she here? Are they here? And then, but as you move up and you would get to the level of, you know, contributor, first of all, but then the highest level of challenger, what does that mean they have to have? You have to have voice.
Right.
That's the aha I just had. Like, and I'm included, doesn't mean I have a voice. But as I go through the stages, everyone has a voice. Everyone has value. And I think the other part that I also want to mention is that this was a huge work in progress for me, is, first of all, confidence because of the mirror, mm-hmm. right? This is what we talk about, Shine, a lot. We put up the mirror, and the mirror is a reflection of me, right? I'm reflecting other people's greatness, and I'm reflecting my flaws back. And we often all do this. So it's learning to put the mirrors down. It's learning to be that it's okay. Like, a leader doesn't have to have all the answers. A leader doesn't have to know all the right ways. Matter of fact, leader doesn't,
mm-hmm.
right? The leader is true leader when they elevate the voices that we're talking about. So I think it's important to remind ourselves that the part that I wish I had done and known earlier, and if we can rewind the clock and be a lot younger, would be to understand that everybody brings their own pieces to it. And so just because I have a certain viewpoint doesn't mean everybody else does. And so when you talk about Abe Lincoln bringing those voices into the room and having a chance to hear from others who may challenge,
mm-hmm.
but not to challenge to challenge, not to challenge because my ego says I have to challenge you, but to challenge because have we considered this? And what have we thought about that?
Yeah, no, that's, and so much of leadership is, unfortunately, we default to it's top down, and the leader has the final say. Now, in some cases, that may be the case, but we hope that when the leader, she or he, makes the, all right, this is what we're doing, that other voices have been invested into that decision and feel part of that decision.
Yes.
What say you about that?
I say absolutely. You know, it's coming back to, you know, I think one of the challenges is, and this is me having lived with an elementary principal, my husband, you know, as the leader, the challenge can be is that ultimately the responsibility still falls upon you.
That's right.
Right. So like, and no matter what happened in his building, it was still, he was the one that was held accountable for it.
Right on.
And I think that that's a part of there's several nuances to this that we have to break through as a society to, if we truly are going to create a place where people want to be, they feel valued, they can contribute and make something the best of the best. It can't be compliance, right? And it can't be the leader who holds every single aspect of responsibility. Like I've watched so many of the leaders that I worked with that anytime something good happened, the credit went to everybody.
Yes.
But the moment something bad happened, those great leaders accepted as themselves.
Right.
And I say great leader, but at the same time, like, as I say that, I'm like, why can't it be a we thing all the time? Like, we are in this together no matter what. And I honor, you know, the leaders and the administrators I've had before who accepted the responsibility. But I think true psychological safety means we truly are all in this. But again, the reality is the administrator in a school building is the one that is held responsible. So it's that challenge of the top leadership, like you were saying, from the top down, the top leadership has to truly understand what psychological safety is and develop that and allow that to happen. It can't be, and it's not to blame everybody in the building, but at the same time, you also can't blame just the administrator.
Right.
So I'm fascinated by it. It's all society. You know, it's all like fake things that we have built up and created.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a responsibility to break that down.
And as you were talking about the four stages of psychological safety and what that means and what that entails, I'm thinking about too the work and the upcoming book of our mutual friend Julie Hassan, and her book is entitled Safe, Seen, and Stretched, and it's coming out at the end of this month, and I highly recommend it.
Yes.
It's amazing. She's amazing, but one of the big things that you again that echoes her work and what you just shared was the fact that inclusion piece means, and that safety piece means, you're seen, you're recognized. There's an awareness of, yes, not only are you in the room, Lavanna, with me, I see you, but I also see that you bring value. I see your gifts and your strengths. And I, as a leader or a colleague, I'm aware of that and I'm in tune to that. Again, what I've just said is a very theoretical stroke. But how can we... And again, with everything zoomed and masked and socially distant and all those things, it's really hard, or it's challenging these days, to see that in each other, because we are just so, at least I am, I have these days, I've got my checklist, I got to get through this, I got to meet this deadline, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, and I know other principals and teachers are on that same kind of tunnel vision. And it's hard, and it's ripping up the fabric of our schoolhouses, you know, because we're not seeing those gifts. So, I guess ideally speaking, maybe how do we do that, and then how can we see that and create that level of psychological safety by really seeing each other in this pandemic that we're in?
Yeah, so you know, there is, when we look at us as humans and how we interact, we do a lot with body language, facial expression, tone of voice, and yet we've lost a good chunk of that.
Yeah.
So we're trying to read cues that are only partially there. So to me, this is where honest conversations, the psychological safety, is even more important. Because now it's an opportunity for me to say, you know, Sean, I really think I just saw you like squint your eyes at me. Are you mad at me? Or was that just you were yawning behind the mask? I couldn't tell. So your eyes squinted closed. Like, you know, it's really having that conversation of open, honest, vulnerable conversation and to be able to ask it how it is. There was a part that right before that you said, and I'm trying to remember the other first part of that question.
How can we see each other, or, you know, part of psychological safety is seeing the value and the gifts and strengths of each other and being aware of that. That's hard now because we're masked up, and how do we, I get married. I don't know if that was.
Yeah, no, that, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. And no, it's a lot of conversations as we've been working with schools this year is about you have that plate and we keep adding more and more to the plate.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Right. And so there was already more and more and more to the plate. And then we added a pandemic.
Right.
And so still now we've added more than we thought we couldn't even add more. And we haven't taken anything off. So part of this, I feel like when we have faculty meetings or have an opportunity to interact with people, we really got to get to know people.
Yeah.
You know, so in order to do that, though, we have to take some things off the plate. And that's been some of the deeper conversation and activities that we've been doing with teachers, especially, but leaders too, is that what are you identifying that is on the plate that is absolutely mandatory? Mm-hmm. Like it's, there's nothing you can do about it. It's state-driven, federal-driven, district-driven, school-driven, you can't do anything about it. And then there's everything else, but we tend to have that lens that we have to do it all.
Right.
And we can't, right? So if we can go through that cycle of what is absolute mandatory versus what isn't, and then look through the lens of what brings us passion, like brings us that energy, because the more we add on, the more drained we get. So what are we passionate about versus what are the strengths and passions of those in the school building? And I think about it, let's take your leadership team, for example. And I haven't met all of them. I can't wait to meet them.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Tomorrow.
Yes.
Yes. Is that if we begin to understand where their strengths and their passions are, then we can now actually divvy up responsibilities differently than we did in the past. Because right now, a lot of our roles, whether it's a teacher, guidance counselor, custodian, it doesn't matter. These are the exact duties. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really have to be that way. So when we start to clear the plate and get some of these things off, we free up a little bit of the time. And the second part I'll say is being present.
Yes.
Right. You said walking through the school building tunnel vision, which everybody's doing. Everyone's thinking that millions of things. What are the millions of things? The things on the plate.
Wow.
So coming from the perspective of what must I absolutely do? And then how do I stay present? And then I am such a believer, and I know you know this so much. Anyone who hears me talk. It goes back to the strengths and the passions.
Yeah.
Right? Because if we're living in our strengths, we're doing what's great. And that, by the way, is a key to confidence. Because we're not going to be great at everything. Right? We're only great at the things that literally are our strengths. And if you look at Gallup research, they will say that a strength will remain a strength, but a weakness will never become a strength. Yet what do we beat ourselves up over every day?
Weakness.
Yes. But we just said the research has proven time and time again that strength will remain strength, but a weakness will never become a strength. So if we focus on the strengths and we marry that with our passions, and we do that within the school building, which means we have to get to know each other, right? So maybe replacing a faculty meeting with things that could actually come off the plate and instead have those honest conversations. And Sean, the reason I'm coming to see your school is because you have embedded Shine In, your team, and you have all run with it. I see it on Twitter, the conversations that you have with kids, the works of what they're writing. Like, I'm getting goosebumps right now because this is the dream of kids feeling shinetastic in their own words. They have said that to you, correct? Yep.
That's right.
Right. And the things that they have written and what they believe about themselves, like if we can build that younger, psychological safety will actually come faster because we're already confident in ourselves, not arrogant.
Right.
Totally different. Right. We're confident in ourselves. And that is what is being fostered in your school. And your students are seeing it. Your teachers are running with it. The leadership team is. Go back to what we just said. Sean, you're the example of this whole conversation.
Oh, no. Right?
Because we said top down. Well, yes, top down, but you're also allowing bottom up. You have the Shine design team, and and it's not just all about Shine. Of course, you know, my world is, because I believe so much in what we do, but you're seeing what's happening with that, and that is going to carry into the academics, because if I don't feel psychologically safe in a classroom, I don't feel confident, my learning is not going to come even close, because we know the brain has to be in a state of learning to learn.
That's right. And I think often, and I've had, and thank you for those kind words. And
well deserved.
And I often think about, and I'm a strong believer of the moment and the ripple effect. And even though it may seem like a small moment, we can't ignore it because it may change a life and it may change someone's world. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the beautiful story. It's the bittersweet story that you share, because I've heard you speak many times over the years, And each time I come away with something new. And I know that there's that one story that you tell about the artist. And as we're talking about psychological safety, and I think, my God, if that person had a hint of it prior to, if someone had seen that and said, wow, you're this gifted artist, and again, I'm kind of paraphrasing the story because I'm waiting for you to pick up the thread.
I can totally do it.
Yeah.
Sean just had to reach across the table because I'm tearing up as he's talking about this. So I have a picture that was hand-drawn, and it was in the home of my friend Nancy in Texas. And I had said to her, so you all have to know just really quick, I'll tell you, I won't tell you the whole backstory, but bottom line is I am not a good artist. Like when I was in college and had to take a class on teaching art, my professor walked by and told me I drew like a second grader.
Wow.
So if that tells you anything, the level of drawing, and she's not wrong, I'm not saying she's wrong by any means, but yes. So when I saw this picture, I was so blown away. And it was a picture of a little boy, and it was my friend Nancy's, her nephew, his name's Colt. Mm-hmm. And so when I do my talks, I show this picture as a part, and that's what Sean's referencing. And I asked my friend Nancy, I said, who in the world drew this picture? And she said, oh, this was drawn by a gentleman, and he drew from a picture of my nephew Colt. And I said, this was drawn from a picture? And she said, yes. She said, it was drawn from a picture because it had to be. Because the man who drew the picture that I was looking at, he had actually drew it while he was in prison for life. That's why it had to be from a picture. And it was her next words, though, that actually just made me freeze. And she said, you know, he didn't know he could draw until he took an art class in prison. And that was the moment that I thought, this is exactly one of the reasons why Shine was born. Because we identify the gifted and talented, particularly in the United States, as science and math. Mm-hmm. In the school system, we identify smart as reading, writing, math, and science. And I don't know about you. I know you, Sean, yes. But as listeners, I think our students and I think we are way more than that. And right, that's on. Clear. So when we have someone who is in a prison system, I'm not saying we're going to change the trajectory of his path, but I would be willing to put money on that we would have. Had we recognized that strength, that skill that he had, and taught him what to do with it. You know, whether it was architect to interior design, selling paintings on Etsy, to being a graffiti artist doing murals for cities.
That's right.
Had we recognized that and shown him what to do with it, might we had. And so I think, you know, about psychological safety too, it's finding out all of those strengths, gifts, skills, talents of people, passions, and then in our schools, are we elevating people, lifting them up through that? So that's what Ignite Your Shine is. Like, ignite the shine and let's help raise that to the point that people feel confident, good about who they are, and that will be the best school, best workplace ever.
And it also echoes, and thank you for sharing that, because it's just such a powerful story. There's the belief. So leaders, educators, we not only have to see the strength. I'm kind of improvising this too. There's no script here, guys. So
I promise you there's not.
but the belief that, man, I really believe that in this classroom, in this schoolhouse, and I do believe that, even on my worst days, like, wow, there is someone in here that is going to change the world. There is going to be we are at the origin story of this world changer. Or if it's not the world changer, and I get a lot of funny looks when people say this, but I really do believe this. If there are no students in the schoolhouse that are going to be the next Steve Jobs or Mother Teresa or Picasso or Andy Warhol or whatever, maybe they're going to be the parent of that person. Maybe they're going to be the teacher of that person. Maybe there is a third grader in your schoolhouse or in your classroom right now who, for all of his or her flaws and idiosyncrasies and zeros on homework, and they've flipped the bird, they've been timeout, they're walking laps, whatever it is. But we are at their origin story for something wonderful that's going to happen, the impact that they're going to have on another life. And they may be the parent of the next Andy Warhol, or the person who figures out how there will never be another pandemic again and cure the whole thing, you know?
Let's do it,
you know? So I, you know, so all the more reason, and again, it's hard for, and I always acknowledge, and if we could, let's acknowledge the difficulty that a lot of our friends and colleagues are carrying right now. There are folks that are listening to this right now going, hell to the no. Are you crazy? Do you understand what I'm doing right now and what I'm going through? And now I got to look at whoever, little Lavana in the back row with her mask on as some sort of world changer. You know, I'm in it right now.
Yes.
And I can't get out of it. And I'm ready to, you know, resign. I'm ready to leave. I'm, you know, I'll do whatever. But that, so how? I just threw a big question at you, you know.
As you do.
Yeah.
So a couple of things that popped in my head was, you know, when we were talking about the role changers sitting in there, man, the power educators have.
Yeah.
Right? So you are that seed of hope. Right? You are the person that provides an opportunity for these students who are going to be world changers. And I would like to kind of back up a little bit on that. To me, a world changer can be somebody within your family, right, as on. In change the world of someone within your family.
Exactly. Right
to on. The community, to literally the world.
Right on. Right?
So I think whether it's the micro world,
I got
that's
you.
A word, I'm going to say it that way.
Yeah.
Right. To the actual true macro world.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible. The second part is what popped in my head too, is that as you, as an educator, saying, oh my gosh, I'm in it. Like, and I hear it so much from educators. It's heavy. And I know I want to honor every single listener right now. I just want to thank you. I also want to say at the same time, remember that your kids are not with you too. Right. So that role changer, which to me are really all of them, right. That role changer, that student who, whether we see the skills and abilities or whether they are driving us nuts and we don't see the skills and abilities yet, that they're in it with us. And so whether it's something that we don't know about at home or something that we may know about at home, we're all bringing different baggage, I guess, or different components to it. So I think as the times when we're feeling down on ourselves, and I will tell you, educators, oh my gosh, you guys, we have to stop being so hard on ourselves. Like, it's go back to the mirror. Or I often ask, like, how many of you would qualify yourself as a perfectionist? And almost 100% of the hands will go up.
Yeah.
Which is a big red flag from the point of that means that we do put that mirror up so, so much. So when it comes to all those little world changers, like if we are modeling putting the mirrors up and putting ourselves down, that's what they're seeing. And every time you step into your classroom, every time you step into the school building, remember everyone is in this together. It looks a little different, but the emotions aren't different, right? It looks a little different, but the emotions aren't different, whether it's fear, overwhelm, whether it's jealousy, whether it's intimidation, whether it's having such joy right now, which I wish I saw more of that right now.
Yeah.
All these different emotions that come into play, but so many times we forget because we think, well, nobody knows what I'm going through, or nobody's been in my shoes, or nobody's been there for that. Yeah, but we've all felt the emotion.
Yeah.
And that's where the connection for humanity to me comes in.
And as you say that, I think of my great hero, Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, and the quote that he often says, if it's mentionable, it's manageable. Huh? Is that something? If it's mentionable, you know, we can get through it. You can manage it. You can, you know, it's
essentially you're labeling it.
You can label it, yeah. Exactly.
So now you can do something with it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. I know as we're wrapping up, for you, when you get to the conclusion of one of your talks, or even just my personal conversations with you as a friend, all right, what are you going to do next? What's the, you know, and again, it goes along the lines of, if it's mentionable, it's manageable, you know. So what would be some, what would be some kind of concrete next steps to building, fostering, sustaining psychological safety, whether it's in a classroom, department, PLC, PLT, schoolhouse? What's a good step?
I would actually survey the staff. You know, mm-hmm. I know you have the book, The Fearless Organization.
Yes. Right? In fact, it's being used as like our podium for my cell phone right now on the kitchen table. So
it's
helping to amplify our voices.
Yes. 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 It's osmosis through the phone.
You got it. Here in the, oh wait, I mean studio, not kitchen.
Oh yes, the studio.
Yes, the studio.
Studio,
yes,
kitchen. Yes, no. Yeah, so looking at in there, I know Amy Edmondson, the author of Fearless Organization, that she has some questions in that you can ask. And I would start with that, a survey with the staff, even a survey with the students. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we do these climate surveys and then all that data goes somewhere. I don't know what anybody does with it, but it goes somewhere, but not back into the discussion of where it should be.
Right.
You know, so So if you want to use the climate survey, fine, do. But then actually do something with it by bringing it in and having the conversations. And where are things getting dropped? And so that's the very first thing is I do the survey, see where things are. Because if you do a survey like the one Amy has, and it's a short one if I remember right, but it's simple little questions, you know, do you feel welcomed when you walk into the building?
Right.
You know, just simple little things. And even give it to parents if you wanted. But start small. I say start with your staff. Start with a classroom. And just get a feel for where things are, because that alone, and then when you bring up the questions, okay, so how many of you do feel comfortable when you walk in? How many of you don't? And just see if you can get kids, for example, to open up, or if they won't open up, are they willing to write it down anonymously and turn it in so that you get more background? And then the more those conversations begin to evolve, again, classroom or staff meeting, it doesn't matter. As those questions evolve, you start to set that stage and you begin to create that culture. So that's one step that I think would be the right direction, at least where to start.
Awesome. You know, sometimes, you know, and I don't know, I'm not attributed to this quote, but sometimes the best way to start is just by asking a question, the first question, and you never know where it lead or end up. So.
Yes, and on that note, by the way, when, you know, if you ask a question and people aren't willing to raise their hand and answer or aren't willing to voice their opinion, red flag.
Yes.
That is a red flag of you have some work to do on psychological safety, you know, and totally doable. Not to quote AA, but it's an awareness. It's that first step, you know, and that's a good thing because now you have that awareness and you understand that, there is a, you know, Houston, we have a problem.
Exactly.
So, and that's it's a starting point.
Exactly. Lavanna Roth, founder of Ignite Your Shine, keynote speaker, author, friend of schools, friend of educators, and just great thought partner. Thank you for coming by the Principal Liner Notes podcast, first in-person guest, and I always feel psychologically safe around you and empowered, and I'm grateful for our years of friendship and looking forward to many more years as friends and bandmates and what have you, whatever we are.
Thank you, Sean. And same to you. And I want to thank you for doing the podcast because I think it's one of those that you'll never know the impact. You and I've talked about this, but you will never know the impact of who all you reach. And, you know, it's not about numbers, but every single person who hears what you have to say and your thoughts, your insights, your experience is someone who leaves better. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. And duly noted and greatly appreciated. And as always, catch you on the flip side.
that's it for this episode of the Principal Liner Notes podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am grateful for your time, and I hope that this particular episode has inspired you and uplifted you. Anytime that I'm in conversation with Lavanna, I am always inspired and uplifted and challenged and encouraged. And I hope that you got a sense of that in our conversation. A very special thanks to Lavanna Roth for being on the Principal Liner Notes podcast and also for being the very first in-person guest. You can follow Lavanna on Twitter and Instagram at Lavanna Roth. You can also visit her website, igniteyourshine.com, and also be sure to check out Prime to Shine as well. That's her other organization that she has founded for aspiring speakers and consultants and keynotes. I hope that this episode finds you safe, and I hope that this episode is giving you some hope, and just know that I am grateful for your presence. I am grateful for the work that you are doing in service and support of kids and families and schools and communities. Don't forget to share your dreams. The world needs them, especially from you. I'll catch you on the flip side.